Welcome to the West Elk Word. I'm Tony Todd, here today with Bill Summers, superintendent for our local Gunnison RE1J. It's one of those.
J1.
Bill, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
And welcome to the Gunnison Valley. You're brand new, so.
Yeah, you bet.
Well, let's start with an introduction. Now, you're new to town. You're kind of settling in. Tell us a bit about your background and the road you've traveled to get here.
All right. Well, my name is Bill Summers. I'm the son of two educators, lifelong educators. My dad was a school psychologist, and my mom ran a program for adults with disabilities for many years. And I have an older sister who's also a school psychologist and special services coordinator. So it's kind of in my blood, although I did not take this path right away. I grew up in Canyon City, Colorado. That's where I graduated from high school. I had the opportunity to go to the United States Air Force Academy, to be honest, without a whole lot of idea of what I wanted to do. So I went in as an engineering major, which most students do in that institution. It's a great engineering school. And about halfway through, I decided I really didn't like math. And that, of course, didn't equate to my engineering career. So I switched my major to English, which is also pretty non-standard for the Air Force Academy. I was one of the very first English degrees or courses for the class of 1989 is when I graduated. I was also only given one career choice out of the Air Force Academy because at the time, if you were healthy, you became a pilot. And I never had a lifelong dream to become a pilot, but man, I'm glad I did. It was a tremendous young career. I got to travel the world. I stayed in for 23 years flying the C-130 Hercules. And really what that meant was that I got to do my mission every day in the Air Force. I did just as many humanitarian aid missions as I did what you might call warfighting missions in my career. And myself and my family got to live overseas for 13 of our 23 years in. I have a wife who's been in education longer than I have because she's been an educator since we first got married 35 years ago. I have three daughters that are all grown. My oldest is a nurse and an Air Force officer. My middle daughter was a high school English teacher and is now a potato farmer in the valley over in Center, Colorado. And my youngest daughter is a third, fourth grade teacher in Canyon City. And they're all doing extremely well and very proud of them. That's my background in the military. I retired in 2012 with a goal of continuing to serve. That was a main focus of what I wanted to do next, and education seemed like a great place to do that. I got my master's in secondary education during my last year in the Air Force. I happened to be stationed in Kuwait. I was a vice wing commander of Ali al-Salam Air Base in that country, and I decided I would do my master's degree while I was deployed, which was fun. And I actually got to go observe as part of my master's degree some classes of Kuwaiti students in Kuwait City. And one of the things I took away from that experience is that children all over the world are just alike. They essentially want to be successful, and they want to have a brilliant career ahead of them. And so that's what I saw in the Kuwaiti students. I then got to go back to Canyon City, become a high school English teacher in my alma mater. I coached girls volleyball because I had some daughters who played that sport. I also coached speech and debate, which made a very big impression on me as a young educator, if you will, just because of how well that program essentially prepares all people that are in it for, I think, life in a civil democracy. I was really happy thinking I was going to go into retirement as a teacher and coach for the rest of my days, and had a opening at the principal's position in my high school, and I tell people that's when I got demoted to administration.
yeah,
I got demoted just because I got further away from students rather than closer, and that was challenging. But I was very happy with the job, with the school. We've done some very innovative things with the staff there. They're a bunch of terrific people, and it also really shaped who I believe, or what I believe education should look like. While I was a principal, I also got very involved in state-level decision-making for education. I think Colorado is a terrific state and gives a lot of thought to its public educators, and I think there's some work to do there. So I'm up for that challenge as well and still involved in that work.
Well, you're brand new, and you haven't really been on the job while students were here yet, have you? So that hasn't happened yet, but I know you've probably made some pretty keen observations already, just first impressions. Can you tell us what kinds of first impressions you're getting from our school district, and what are some positive things that you're seeing that maybe were some of the deciding factors in why you decided to take this job?
I think people is the number one positive. The people that I've met here, starting with the interview process, going through to the turnover that I got from the previous superintendent, Dr. Nichols, just absolutely amazing. I just continue to meet top-notch, caring, warm individuals who want the best for the children of this community, and that plays right into why I do what I do. And so I think it's ideal. I also, there's such a thing as what I call a Goldilocks school district. Not too big, not too small, just right sized. And I think this school district falls into that category. And what that means really is that we have enough resources to be able to move forward and do things innovative and on behalf of our students. And we're not so big that it's hard to change.
Well, speaking of that, what are some of the things, maybe opportunities that you see for improvement or for some of those innovations?
You know, I think there's always opportunities. And I'm a true believer that if you think that you've arrived, that you have done everything you need to do in education, I suggest you retire. I suggest you get out of the business, because society changes, culture changes, our world changes, technology changes. And so as a educator, we always have to innovate and try to stay ahead of it, which I don't believe public education has done a particularly good job of doing over the years. I think they lag behind. They get enamored with one form of accountability over another, and they tie into the business of that. And so really what I think all districts need to look at is, how do we improve so that every student in the district has a future opportunity? Not just top scoring test takers, not just students who have figured out that where they want to go, but those students that are still looking, those students who have some challenges either in their family or their socioeconomic status. How do they succeed and get to the next level? And what kind of programs and opportunities do we bring students so that they're well-educated, that they learn the skills that they need to earn a good living and to become a good member of society?
You mentioned debate as a way of helping students become good citizens. Tell us a little more about that, and would you be willing to bring that to the district? And how does that fit into our current culture of high tech? That seems a bit old school compared to what we see today, and yet it's a skill that seems more in need than ever before, the ability to listen and respond in a critically thought way.
Yeah, and not just listen and respond, and to be civil while you do it is another really big point. The other side to debate that always struck me as well-balanced is the idea that in some forms of debate and high school competition, you don't know which side you're going to argue until the coin flip right before the event starts. And therefore, you must be prepared to debate either side. And I think our society would be better overall if we were able to use the technology that's before us to learn hard facts and reasons and opinions and understand the emotions of all sides of an argument. And if we went into a conversation understanding why the other person is as passionate as we are, we could have a lot better discourse.
What are some of the other innovations and ideas that you have in mind?
There's a couple things. One of the things is that relevance in education, it's been a buzzword. It's, you know, kind of coined by several different educators in the past. Dr. Bill Daggett is where I really heard it. And this idea that you're tying that education and that knowledge to a student's future, you obviously get that at the college level. But oftentimes at the K-12 level, you don't understand or get the relevance because we're so wrapped up in teaching the material and making sure it's tested and remediated that we forget to connect it to a child's future. And I think relevance is a big part, and sometimes the best way to connect to a student is through their career. So this idea of career-connected learning is big. I have some experience doing that in previous districts. I see other districts around the nation that are doing extremely well, and they're having a lot of success with it. So understanding, hey, how come I need to learn this math formula? To know that if I want to go build houses, it's a very big part of understanding that business, that industry. And I think that's important. I also think we need to provide relevance through passion, right? What is a student passionate about? What do they individually want to do with their lives? And then connecting to their passion is a really big idea in education. So I'm big on that.
Does that include incorporating more experiential learning so students can actually feel the relevance themselves or practice the relevance themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you think about, as an Air Force pilot, I will never forget my year of pilot training. I was down in Phoenix, Arizona when I did that, and it was an intense year, if you can imagine, learning how to fly the Air Force way. And it was really separated into two separate categories. One of them was academic education. You needed to know the systems of the airplane. You need to know how aerodynamics worked. And so we spent a lot of time in the classroom, especially early in that program. But if that were all we did was learn academics, we would not be pilots. And on the flip side of the coin, we spent a lot of time training. Back in the day I learned how to fly, we sat in mocked up airplane models and did a lot of hands-on skills training before we ever got into a real airplane. But then we spent a lot of time in airplanes and we had skills training. And it is the combination of those two things, the academic knowledge put into practice through skills training, that I think is the most critical thing that educators can do. And sometimes in K-12 education, we get way wrapped up on the academic side and forget that the experiential side is just as important. We have to have those skills. We have to tie the academics to what you're going to use it for in the future, and that's very important.
How do you do that when the variety of possible careers that a student might choose feels infinite? Like, how do you do that?
That's the challenge. I mean, if you look at an urban school district where they get the benefit of having maybe 10 high schools in their district, you can specialize a high school, right? This high school here is going to focus on medical career fields. This other one is going to do service industry, and so on. I've toured a lot of those districts and their schools and see how well they work. One of the things that happens when you do that is that you lose the sense of traditional high school values, the sentimentality of high school. And what I love about rural education is that you still have that neighborhood school feeling. You're not going to lose that because there's no other school to go to migrate to, so you get to retain that. But the challenge is, how do you provide everything to all students? What I can tell you is that you have to lean on the community and you have to lean on higher education. And great news for this area is we have lots of great business partners that we can reach out and say, hey, let's come be a part of the education of our students. And we have a higher ed institution that's, I think, not only excellent, but has shown its care for these students in some of its recent programs, like the Western Promise.
Yeah, I could actually see that scenario that you just mentioned, where a big city could have 10 different high schools and each high school has a specialty. Those students then would only be hanging out with the students that have their same specialty. So the math intense kids who are maybe want to be in engineering or in some sort of science field wouldn't be interacting with the art kids, and the art kids maybe wouldn't be interacting with the service kids. And so that you lose something in the community of high school by virtue of that. You don't have, for example, what I had, which is I had nerdy academic friends, I had jock friends, I had average kids just trying to get by friends. I had kids who wanted to be mechanics and kids who wanted to go to Harvard, all in my same high school.
Yeah.
And I interacted with all of them. And that's, there's something to be said for that, because that's who lives in our world.
Absolutely there is. And I also think the sense of community of not just the students at the school, but their parents surrounding them also means a lot to a community. And so another reason why, when I considered being a superintendent, I really never gave thought to doing it in an urban environment. I really wanted to come rural, and I wanted to come to a district that had all those opportunities, if you will.
If you are just joining us here today on the West Elk Word, I'm Tony Todd, here with Bill Summers, the new superintendent of public schools for our local Gunnison RE1J school district. Reading a number of articles recently about teachers or even whole school districts trying to figure out what to do in the age of AI and the age of the smartphone. Some schools are banning smartphones. Some are adapting their own AI rules and regulations. Some are going old school. Some teachers are actually going back to paper and pencil and having their students write and read all in class so that they actually get those fundamentals down. What are your thoughts on this rapidly changing and omnipresent technology that we live with in the face of what our kids really need to learn?
I think that school districts should always have a moderate approach to what the latest trend is. I certainly know that technology onset was something that the COVID pandemic brought to the forefront, and there were many school districts touting how effective it was because of the circumstances of mass gathering at that time. I'm not a fan of swinging the pendulum back to no technology, because I think one of the things that would be a little blind about that is the idea that students are going to be faced with technology outside of schools, and they're going to be faced with technology in their futures. And so it is a responsibility of all schools to essentially teach students what technology is and can do for them, what its traps and hazards are. And I certainly think on a day-to-day basis, there should be a good mix of computer, laptops closed, and face-to-face human interaction, as well as an opportunity to learn what technology is doing for students and learn how to use it responsibly. And I think that's important on both sides. I think the reaction to cell phones in particular is actually more of a reaction to social media. And I think probably well-deserved. Anybody who's raised three daughters, as I have, in the social media world knows how it can impact them negatively. I've talked to many, many students about that. I know the school district I just came from put in a restriction in place, and I was shocked by student interactions about, they basically were saying, thank you, I appreciate this. It was too much of my day, and it was bad for me. And I know this school district recently put in some restrictions as well. And I think it's going to have a positive outcome because it'll help students regulate and control their emotions, given social media's impact.
And maybe help with time management as well. It's very easy for time to get away from you when you're scrolling through videos.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. So when you reflect on your professional experiences, you were a teacher, you've been a coach, a principal, the administrative side, and even a pilot, what are some of the lessons that those experiences give you that maybe give you a leg up, say, for running a school district like this?
One of the things that I think, in particular, the Air Force did is instill in me this idea that real and effective leadership has to be about serving the people that you lead, not the other way around. So I'm a big believer in service leadership, and the idea that I'm here to enable people to do well on behalf of the organization and its customer, which of course is the children of this community, that will be a better school district if teachers and bus drivers and custodians and educational aides are empowered to lead and encourage and change, and that my job is to enable that change. And I think that's a really important concept. Anybody who thinks they're going to come in and be the sole person of change won't be around long, and they won't impact change. And so I think that's important. I also think that a lot of people look for the next greatest fad or trend, the quick answer, the easy solution in improving education, especially public education. And I'm a true believer that that's not real, that real change is done by listening to good ideas, by properly resourcing them, and then by working really hard and being patient, because change doesn't happen overnight. I had a mentor tell me it takes 5 years to impact change in education. What I found in my last school is he was spot on, if not a little bit optimistic about that time period. So I think it's, and that's the bottom line, is that we have to be dedicated, we have to do the hard work, and we have to wait and make sure that we give things a chance to work.
Well, speaking of giving things a chance to work, we have a kind of some new changes in the building to the facility, especially in the Crested Butte School. And you wanted to issue a things are great, but be patient because they're still in progress message.
First, an absolute shout out to all the people that have done the work in this community for the last couple of years under this change. It's not easy to live through these conditions. And I know that every educator in the buildings that have undergone the change have been through a tough time. They've endured so that we could get to this point. Opening up the new schools is exciting, and they're beautiful, and they're going to be a tremendous asset. And remember, you don't build a school for next year, you build a school for the next 50 years. And I think keeping that in mind as we go into this fall is going to be important for the communities, because there will be opportunities, we'll say, to need to fix things, to make sure that we take advantage of the warranty periods and call the contractors back to make sure that they get it just right. And sometimes that can be frustrating after such a long period of construction. But it's important. It's important to get it right for the future generations.
And you know that's going to happen, because that just always happens.
It happens, yeah. Absolutely.
It does. So, Bill, what else would you like folks to know about you or about what they can look forward to in this coming school year, which is starting really in just a few weeks?
Yeah. First and foremost, that I value learning above almost any other activity. I love to learn, and that means I want to learn about this district. I want to listen to people. I want to empower them and their good ideas so that we all benefit from that, and that I'm willing to put in the hard work. I think that's been my track record in all my jobs, is that I'm not afraid to stay extra hours, and I'm not afraid to take on tough things, because I think in the end we all benefit.
Excellent. Well, Bill Summers, thank you so much for joining me today on the West Elk Word.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of the West Elk Word. You can listen to this or any edition of the program anytime. Go to kbut.org, click Programs, then West Elk Word. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.